very good Friday morning to you, and welcome into the DDC here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Elijah Campbell manning the board at our Hillside Medical Game Studio. Another gorgeous day here in Middle Tennessee. Hope everybody's having a good day thus far. The suit. That cuts out when I do that. Did it yesterday, too. Will join us a little bit later in the program. Never know what he's up to. He is coming in starting at noon, so he may have a "you just made the list." Or he may be monitoring what I'm going to say because Truist Park. Yeah. It's not that big of a deal. It's really not. Because I know Nate, I think on our text line, or he tweeted at me and said, "Oh, I'm nervous. I'm going to my first Braves game. What are you going to put on the list? Like, what should I go?" No, just hold out for noon. It's not that bad. It's something that's just list worthy. I mean, I'll just leave it at that. We've already kind of been there, done it, but it's time to reiterate something that belongs back on the list still, because it just doesn't make any sense to me. Anyway, we'll save that for noon. What a fourth quarter last night. Game one of the NBA Finals. Boston down 12 going into the final quarter?
Down 15 in the final quarter.
Did they get to, they got down 15?
I think 15, yeah, was the most they were down last night.
I watched, well, when I got home from baseball practice, I watched the Avs game, which was uneventful. They shut down the Oilers. So, by the way, that was the play. I goofed on that. The play was the under in that game, and I should have given that out as a freebie yesterday. That was so easy. You come off an 8-6 game. In fact, didn't game two play out like that in the Edmonton-Calgary series?
Overhit in game two in the Calgary-Edmonton series.
Game two, the overhit in game two? Mm-hmm. I don't know. What was the final in game two?
I think the over-under was like 6.5, and at the end of the first period, I think it was 3-2 Calgary. And then it ended up being 4-3 because it went to overtime.
I would be surprised it was only 6.5. If you have a 9-6 game,
so I remember
Calgary and Edmonton both could score, because last night was 7.5.
Yeah, it was 7.5 last night, but it was still, I think it was still only like 6.5 going into that game, because I took it at 6.5 and I got it.
But with the goalie situation in both teams,
true,
I see why the over under was what it
well,
was.
Well, actually, it should be higher with the goalie situation. Well, you would think it would be higher.
Well, didn't you just say the play was the under?
The play was, I'm saying, for the over-under total, it should be a higher number.
Was it 6.5?
It was 7.5 last night.
Oh, last night was 7.5.
7.5.
Yeah, so that makes sense. Yeah, but, you know, I can see why it's 7.5 is, I guess, my point.
Yeah.
With the ability for those teams to score.
An 8-6 game, it's just natural. I mean, typically, the odds, you're going to take the odds. They're going to be in your favor that it's going to be more of a low-scoring affair. Did I think it would result in a shutout? No, but I thought 7.5 was too high when you come off a 14-goal game. And, of course, it played out that way. So, Avs are in control. I think I'll just continue to say it. I just think it's their year. I think they've heard all the noise. They've been beaten down by early exits from the playoffs, and they know there's going to be changes coming because they're not going to be able to afford everybody, and I just think it's probably their year. I'd be surprised if somebody beats them four times in a series.
I think what I'm seeing from them is that they're showing you how many different ways they can beat you. They're learning how to win in the different ways like Tampa did over the years, and it took Tampa a couple years to figure out, hey, if a team wants to play this way, how do we beat them? If a team wants to play this way, how do we beat them? That's what the great teams do. Tampa is the lead example of that. I think Colorado's learning that. I think they adjusted and basically said, you know what, we're still going to score some if we put a little more emphasis on defense, and we don't have to just run and gun and just get into a track meet with them. You might be able to win both types of games, which they did in game one, but this is maybe the better formula for them. And I think they now have the formula to go on the road and try to contain Edmonton, even when Edmonton has the last change. But Edmonton also, they may have lost Yamamoto, who's an important player for them.
He's been a key guy.
And the word is that Darnell Nurse, who is their ace defenseman, is not at 100%. He's getting lit up on the ice, and I think they're getting asked about him, and they're kind of grudging. You know, they don't talk about injuries, but they're trying to give him a little slack because he's not himself out there. There's some trouble signs for Edmonton, just trying to keep up.
Clearly, he was frustrated late in the game. Who was he going after? He just kept slashing and
just dumb.
And they eventually called him. It's like he wanted to go to the box.
It was Lekkonen, I think.
No, I don't think so. I don't believe
Who
so.
Else?
It was
Nichushkin. Nichushkin.
Yeah.
And he just kept. And Nichushkin was like, okay, "You can keep hammering me. I'm not going to come back at you."
And then is like
he's just frustrated.
Yeah.
Nurse was like, "I'm just going to keep hammering away until
like
I call
said,
something."
It looked like he was like, "Just send me." It was like Hoosiers. Hey, I'm gonna yell and scream. Just throw me out of the game, okay?
Yeah.
You know, it's like he was like going up to the ref, like, "Hey, just send me the box, okay? Watch this. Send me the box." I think I need a break here. I'm frustrated. I'm not playing well, and he just kept going and going and going there. Finally, they're like, "All right, okay, that enough from you. Get to the box."
Yep.
Yeah. It seems like it's going to be too big of a mountain for Edmonton to climb. And I know it's not like 2-0 was the worst deficit ever, but again, the way Colorado's playing, I mean, really nobody's been even close. If you really think about it. I mean, St. Louis, they hung in there. They did. But has there been a real scare? I mean, when you look at their series to this point, have they really been challenged? I mean, really challenged, where you're like, I don't know, this series.
Not really. I'll keep saying it. I think St. Louis is the second best team in the West.
Yeah.
And they were clearly a full notch below.
Yeah.
Colorado. But only time will tell. Anything can happen. And they're going back to Edmonton. But Colorado's in a great spot. And Francois was pretty solid. I don't know if they said anything about Kemper potentially being available down the road. But that must be a pretty nice feeling that you don't have your starting goalie and you're still feeling pretty good
and
about
he's played
being the best team.
Pretty well, so I'm not sure there's a
he's
real
plays
rush.
Okay. Yeah, he played fine.
Don't think there's a real rush. Because Kemper hasn't played great.
Yeah, you wonder. Well, he made it through the entire series against St. Louis and did well, so you wonder what the issue is. Some people were wondering if it's still something from the vision, from the stick in the mask, but I don't think that could be it, right? Because he made it through the entire second round.
Yeah.
But, of course, nobody says anything.
It seems like a stretch.
I think so, but I don't know.
But this is what happens when
you don't say anything.
You want to classify everything, then everybody just is going to speculate.
Yep.
Everybody's going to say whatever they want, so... I don't know why gambling hasn't changed that for hockey. I realize it's not at the level of football. It's not even close. But I thought the gambling element would force them.
You would think.
You know,
and it's
disclose
also,
more.
Yeah, because there's inside information that I'm sure is available to some, and that would be valuable information. It's going to put people in a tough position. Eventually, there's going to be people that know stuff that other people don't.
Yeah.
If you don't do what the NFL has done. And the NHL so far has been able to sort of not say anything. They get asked about it. Hey, you're in bed with these companies. You're taking the money from these companies. Don't you think you ought to play the game and be a little more upfront with injuries? Not yet. They haven't changed one bit. Not yet.
Well, I mean, it would honestly take the gambling companies that pay them lots of money to force the issue. To say, hey.
But you would have to do it through the league, right? You'd have to pressure the league.
Right. Well, I mean, the league's in, they're all getting money.
I guess the gambling companies probably get the money either way. But I just think that there's an advantage to probably some people that know insiders.
Of course.
And I'm not even saying that those insiders necessarily get anything to gain, but somebody knows something and to say, I remember a story that a coach told me one time. There was a gambler on the college basketball scene that was really well known in the recruiting circles, and he was a guy that ran basketball camps and you know, help players find the right schools, help coaches find the right players. He was involved. And then during the season, he would call up coaches and say, how's so-and-so feeling? You know, he would literally call the offices and see if he could get some injury info, you know, insider information. So that's been happening for as long as time, right? I mean, this is one example.
If that surprises anybody, then welcome to gambling.
Think about there are still hockey coaches that won't tell you who the goalie is at the morning skate.
Yeah.
But there are people at that morning skate that know exactly who the goalie is if they, you know, they just stumble upon it sometimes. So some people that go the extra mile, if you believe that that's going to make a difference in the game, that could affect how you wager on the game.
Yeah, it's
very archaic.
It's
compared to football.
It's outdated.
Yeah.
It's outdated, and hockey needs to look into it.
Yeah.
But nobody's gonna change anything until they're forced.
Until they're forced to. Right. It's habit.
They're not gonna just wake up and be like, you know what, you're right.
Yeah.
Let's start disclosing.
You know, on the
stuff.
Other side of it, there was a clip during the Calgary Edmonton series when it came out that Leon Draisaitl has a bad ankle, which was like, they actually figured out what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You're never supposed to figure out what it is. And there was a shift where sure enough, they showed the video. I mean, it could have been coincidental, but like three different flames took a whack with their sticks at Draisaitl's ankle. They did. They got the old school coach. It was easy to put together. Hey, the film was there. Like, you could argue whether that was actually happening or not. It looked to me like, hey, you might have something there. I don't know. But the three guys did, coincidentally, on the same shift, take a hack at Draisaitl. Now, did that do anything to worsen the injury? Probably not. Yep. He dominated the series.
Yeah.
He still was dominant. But
we saw it here in 08. Was it 08, right? The Ravens? Playoff game? I was sitting there in the press box.
With Chris Johnson.
Yeah. I was like, watch. Look at the Ravens. Look what they're doing after every time they tackle Chris Johnson. They're like literally twisting his leg. Because they knew he had an ankle injury.
Mm-hmm.
And he left in the second quarter not to return. You think that was a coincidence? You just think it just flared up?
Yeah.
No. That stuff's been going on. There's already been a manager fired in MLB. See you later. We'll tell you about that. And continue the discussion on the other side. By the way, Vanderbilt gets their region kicked off this afternoon. Tennessee will kick off their region in Knoxville this afternoon. We'll talk about all that coming up next here on the DDC, ESPN 102.5 The Game. John McClain coming up at 11 o'clock. Looking forward to that. Uncle John. Story time with Uncle John coming up to begin the second hour. I watched the piece on Real Sports about Deshaun Watson.
You did?
I did.
Was wondering when you were going to do that. I know you're a fan of that show.
Well, I actually watched it again, as probably the better way to put it. I watched it again. I knew we were going to have John on, and I watched it again. And we'll obviously get into that with John, because I'll continue to say it. I don't think this has any chance of actually working in Cleveland. I think it's going to be a disaster. I just think it's going to be too much. He's going to have – I mean, it's one thing to have the pressure of that contract to begin with, and everything you do is going to be compared to being the highest paid player in the league. And then it's this and you play for the Browns now, which don't have a great track record of success and doing things the right way. Quite honestly, there's just been too many times I think Haslam has come off looking like a boob as the owner for the Browns. I thought he was going to be a good owner, but I've watched him over the years. I'm just like, ugh, just a lot of shaking my head. Like, I thought you were going to be a good owner. I don't believe that anymore.
A lot of stuff has happened.
I forgot that feeling a good while ago that you were actually going to be a good owner for the Browns. But the other part of this, and it seems like when you look at their contract, it's like they're preparing for the worst this next upcoming year, right? It's almost like I think that's why I think they're going to keep Baker around. It feels like because they've got his number really, really low. So in other words, they can still pay Baker, what, $19 million against the cap, because I think they're bracing for he's not going to be available or not going to be available much this season. I don't know what the number's going to be. He's going to get suspended. But I just think all this that's come out, look, He can sit there with a smile or deadpan or however look he wants every press conference. It's going to be really uncomfortable, and it's going to be really weird for him. They go on the road. It's going to get weird. And by the way, that's, you know, if you believe what's being said, and I've said it before, I don't know how 23 people come out and just say this stuff and just make up stuff. Like, that's just not how life works. People, 23 strangers don't get together and just come out and say, hey, let's file a lawsuit against somebody and let's all stick to the same story. Like, that's just not how life works.
That's what their lawyers would have you believe. Based on,
I thought the girl that was on there was a joke.
Just ridiculous.
A joke.
Ridiculous. Adam, I give them credit for defending their client. The story is so flimsy. It's a flimsy story.
I think rather than looking at Deshaun Watson, we need to look at
the lawyer.
The attorney.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. I'm sure they really appreciate hearing that. You know what? Yeah, let's not look at anything you're saying. Let's look at the attorney.
Hocus pocus.
I mean, it's just so ridiculous. But that's going to be a lot for him to overcome. I just don't think this is going to work. I think it's going to be an absolute fail for the Browns. I may end up being wrong, but if I am, I'll take it and say, boy, I was wrong on that. Like I was wrong on Justin Herbert. Because I was like, yeah, I'm not sure about Justin Herbert at the next level. I'm going to be wrong on that.
Well, we've all done that.
Actually, I'm already wrong on that because he's the real deal.
We've all done that. But on this one, I watched that piece. And I just say to myself, how could he not be suspended? How could there not be a suspension coming on some level? There has to be, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Cleveland's bracing
despite for it. Despite the non-criminal thing, when you just listen to the facts that are not in dispute, you have a pattern that is so obvious, right? I mean, he had like 100 different massage therapists.
Yes.
Over 100.
If you think the number's 23, it's not.
Well, 23 have now joined the suit with another one coming.
There's a whole lot.
More people are hearing, oh, that's what happened to you? That happened to me too.
Yeah, well, that number's not going to stop. It'll stop eventually.
Right. Even if you try to buy it, maybe some therapists, you know, got caught up in, hey, this is Deshaun Watson, and hey, this is kind of fun. You know,
well, if maybe that happens with a couple, that.
But it's so obviously inappropriate what he did. There's got to be a suspension, even if it was not a criminal thing. And I don't care if they win the lawsuit or not, which I think he's going to end up paying a lot of money. Just my prediction. I'm not a lawyer or anything like that. But in the quote unquote personal conduct, that's inappropriate conduct and a major, major pattern. Come on. I mean, it's just fact.
Yeah. Again, that's just not how life works.
No.
Strangers don't get together and say, hey, let's make up this story about somebody. Somebody famous. And let's all stick to it.
The same exact
and
thing.
And know that none of it's true. Yeah. Like, let's do that. That would be cool, wouldn't it? Ready, break. Like, that's not how life works. No, that's not. Like, come on. That's common sense. Now, could there be things twisted or what? Okay, yeah, but either way, it's their argument. Like, that girl, I'm assuming she's with the firm, right? That's with Deshaun Watson. I don't know why she's the one who chose to spoke. She's not the
she's
lead
not the head person.
She's
the
not
Rusty,
the lead attorney.
Rusty of course, Harden or whatever, who did Roger Clemens.
Right,
and
he's very famous.
If you're under the gun, that's your guy, Dad, yeah. Especially in Texas.
Yes, but she spoke, which I thought that was interesting. When she said, like, she lost right then, it was like, okay, I don't care anything. Yeah, this is not. I think we don't need to look at Deshaun Watson. We need to look at the attorney. He was soliciting these girls. Oh, right. So he put out there, hey, if you got a story coming, and these girls are like, oh, you know what? This attorney asked for a story. I'll just sign up for that. Like, come on, just stop it.
Right. Okay. So if you have not seen the HBO Real Sports piece with Brian Gumbel, and it's Soledad. O'Brien? Is that O'Brien? Who's the last name? I didn't even think she grilled the lawyer the way she could have. She said, we're out of time. She could have gone on for 15 minutes.
It seems like, did you think it was like an abrupt ending?
I think they probably said, we'll give you 5 minutes or 3 minutes, probably from the attorney side. and then that's it.
Maybe so.
Maybe I think that's why she said it, but she could have continued. But if I would encourage you, if you have not paid close attention to the details, that's what this brought out. If you haven't read the Sports Illustrated investigation on this, if you haven't read what The Athletic has put out there, do it. Because that's when you're going to hear the firsthand accounts of several of the women. There's so many consistencies and patterns within that. It's hard to not come to the conclusion, hey, something very inappropriate happened here, and there's got to be a price to pay for that. I'm not saying he should never play again. The Browns have already, they know all this. Even if they've looked the other way to a degree, which is, that's part of the story, is that the Browns have kind of asked some people what happened, but not other people that probably have a lot of knowledge. And they kind of figured out what they wanted to, and they said, hey, look, it didn't happen on our watch. We're going to look forward, is what the Browns have been saying. Hey, whatever happened, hey, this happened, but we're looking forward, and we have confidence that Deshaun going forward is going to be okay. They're going to give him a second chance, but there's got to be more of a price to pay, I think.
Well, apparently almost half the league was interested in his services. That was part of the piece. So
yeah. It goes to Derek's point yesterday on Antonio Brown. It might have sounded absurd to some people, but it's another example. The league, if you can help them win, they'll rationalize it in some way.
That's why, I know for our text, we were reading a lot of the text, like, no, no way, hell no, blah, blah. Like, I get it. But for the people who are like, that would never happen, like, Like, I probably would have been that category many times in the past, way, way past. But to what you just said, to what Derek said, it's true. I mean, if they think that you can help them,
they'll find.
How many times have I said they're phony? They don't. They really don't care. What was his name? Greg Harvey or no?
Yeah, Greg Harvey. Greg Harvey, the Panthers defensive end.
Right, that went to Dallas. Mm-hmm. The reason he's like Dallas.
Kevin Hardy.
Greg Hardy. Greg Hardy. That's Hardy. Not Harvey.
Yeah.
Who's Greg Harvey?
He's a friend of ours.
Yes. Okay.
Same league baseball legend, Greg Harvey.
Okay, I was like, why did I just say Greg Harvey?
Because you know Greg Harvey.
You're right. That's a good point. Yeah. Greg Hardy. Dallas signed up for that because they thought he could help him. They didn't care about what happened. I mean, go read the accounts. Like, they didn't know. Of course they knew.
Brutal.
They didn't care. You know the reason he's not playing anymore?
The Cowboys have a list. The Cowboys have a list of guys.
Nobody believes he can help him anymore.
They traded for Pac-Man Jones in the height of Pac-Man's issues. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So they've always had that sort of attitude.
I want to ask John about Kaepernick too, because I do believe, and you've heard me say this over the years, I just think if you're going to call them phonies, which I believe they are, then I think it's just simply for the last, 6 years, 5 years, I think they've looked at him and said, I don't think this guy can help us. I don't believe it's about all the stuff that we've talked about in the past. I believe they've tried. Like, think about it. He did the tryout with the Raiders, and we haven't heard boo since then. Nothing.
At this point, though, he's so far removed from playing. We're at a different stage of it. But it is so interesting that when he was still a viable player, and obviously one of the 30 best quarterbacks in the league, even if you thought he wasn't a starter, the fact that nobody did that in retrospect is still baffling to me. That's an interesting one.
And don't you think it's weird that nothing has come out from the Raiders since then? Nothing. He did a workout, and everybody videoed it. Everybody was paying close attention to it. And you've heard crickets from the Raiders. Because, again, I don't think they want to come out and say, he's rusty. I don't think they don't want to do that. You know what they're going to just tell us? Nothing. They're just not going to sign him. And then they've told us, we don't believe he can help us. He's not good enough. That's the way it feels. I think if he was good enough and people felt like he could help them win, if they needed him, he'd be signed. Like, I don't think this is about being blackballed from the league. I think it's about
teams have looked at him and said,
I don't think he can help us.
But I guess at least that's plausible now when a guy hasn't played for 6 years, that it's plausible that you think, hey, I'm not sure this guy can help us now. But at the time, back in, you know, 2017, 2018, that was when it was a little harder to believe
he wasn't one of the 30 best quarterbacks. You can make a much stronger case then. I think today it's kind of hard to go that well, don't you think?
Yep.
All right, we'll come back. Vince Ferrara is going to set us up for the region in Knoxville. I think their game is at 5 o'clock our time. Vanderbilt's first pitch is, I think, at 3 o'clock our time. If you want to watch these games, they're going to be – it's going to be – you're just going to need to find the ESPN programming, whether it's you, news, whatever, the Deuce, Ocho,
plus, pick an ESPN. Minus.
Plus, minus, positive, negative. Anything platform of ESPN, you can find college baseball starting today. All these regionals will get cranked up and they'll be available. But Vince will set up this UT region. We had a good conversation with Dave Neal yesterday, but Vince will set that up here on the other side, here on the DDC, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, a special edition of Smoky Mountain Rain. Let's head
special
east.
Special edition.
Gotta love it. Our man, Vince Ferrara, at Vince Sports on Twitter. He's got his back adjusted. He's ready for the weekend. I don't think he's going to be swinging a bat, but his back is in good shape. It's straight, and he's ready to get after it. Georgia Tech and Campbell kick things off here in about 25 minutes in the Knoxville Regional, and then Tennessee and Alabama State will be at 5 o'clock our time tonight. Of course, these are all central times that I'm giving you. The Tennessee-Alabama State game will be on SEC Network if you want to watch it tonight. And, of course, they'll be carrying it on the Vol Network where Vince is, and he now joins us. Vinny, how we doing?
Good, guys. How we doing?
Well, the question is, how are you? You got a little extra pep in your step? You ready to go?
Well, you've been through stuff with your back.
Oh, yeah.
Darren. So sometimes it's a matter of just – somewhat improved is a huge win. So been dealing with hip issues. It, you know, kind of sucked, kind of slap you in the face in terms of, you know, being old and all that kind of, you know, fun stuff. But so, yeah, this is one of the things that does help me, just working on 73 other things to try to go with it. But I'm good. I appreciate you asking.
Who was it, Willie, that told us it was the best line? And I want to give them credit, but I'm afraid I'm going to name the wrong person. Who was telling us, nobody ever said I had a former back injury.
Oh, Tim Hasselbeck.
Was that Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It was Tim. Yeah. Okay.
Been quoting somebody else.
I used to have back problems. Like things people never say. I used to, back when I had back problems, right? Like nobody ever
kind of follows
it. It's like, oh, I just have one gray hair. Yeah, well, guess what? I got bad news for you. One is like gremlins after midnight, right? They're just going to multiply. Okay, so just get used to it. Get ready.
That permanent aspect of it is the hardest thing. Whether you go to the doctor or realizing that that's the case, the fact that it's permanently there, you just kind of got to work around it. That's the biggest mental hurdle.
What's permanently there is the ball going over the fence in Knoxville and with this Vols team. And we talked a little bit on this on Monday. We kind of wrapped up more about the SEC championship game, what went on in Hoover. We had Dave Neal on yesterday. Let's just start right there, because typically the sweet spot for this conference has been getting three teams to Omaha. I've been saying all year, and Willie's kind of pushed back, but I kind of feel like after talking to Dave Neal yesterday that he was more in my camp. He said it. I said, I think the conference is down a tick this year. And I get it. Standards are always high. I think it's been a down year. I don't believe three teams are getting to Omaha. He doesn't either. He thinks two. What do you think is the number?
I would probably go the under if I'm not going to push, and I'll answer your question. I would pick a side and probably go the under, because in typical years you have – the depth at the top, where maybe the top team doesn't have Tennessee's record, but man, they're awful good. They're winning 75% of their series in conference play. The record is great. The numbers are great. Once you get past Tennessee, who has been so far ahead of everybody else, that brought everybody else down. And now those second and third and fourth place teams are a little bit more flawed. They've had some tougher stretches, some better stretches. A&M has probably been the best for the longest period of time after Tennessee, and that's probably where I would go for my second. But everybody else has had tough stretches. You know, Arkansas, LSU, after that, Auburn was hosting. I'm a little surprised that Auburn's hosting ahead of LSU, but it was close. I mean, all those teams have had impressive stretches, have had rough stretches. And so, yeah, I think there is more inconsistency. And we've seen, and you know, Vanderbilt's not what we typically see. Florida's not what we typically see. So it may be one of those years like we've seen in football, right, where it's Alabama and everybody else, and then you can say, well, the SEC is down. Well, yeah, it's maybe more competitive and there's more parity after the number one, but what does that do in terms of the end result in the postseason? Some years the SEC is able to cash in when that's the case, whether it's just Alabama and Georgia and everybody else or just Alabama, and have a good bowl season. Other times they've been kind of weak in the bowl season, and they win the national championship. So it is a weird year from that standpoint for baseball, not like we're used to seeing.
You're going to be doing the game with John Wilkerson on the network, and we've talked about you. By the way, 8.5 is the over-under. Or not the over-under. That is their line. The Vols are favored by 8.5, I mean, which is
8.5 runs?
8.5 runs.
Right.
Is absurd for a baseball game.
But really not in this case.
I know, and so that's where I'm going with this. Are you amazed? It's one thing to look at their record and all the stuff that we've talked about all season long, their home runs, their pitching, their strengths, very, very few weaknesses. I think what's really stood out to me and has been amazing, and I want to know if you think that will continue, at least we'll just stick with this regional, with Georgia Tech, Campbell, Alabama State, and Tennessee, do you think they're going to just continue to make it look easy? I mean, think about it. They're rarely challenged.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that stands out is that we're talking about lines in college baseball and Tennessee.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Kind of new, right? But I think there will be some tough games. Look, that was the case for a couple of games in Hoover. I mean, Kentucky and Florida both were played Tennessee tough, and eventually the Vols pulled away in the mid to late innings against Florida and late innings against Kentucky. So I think you're going to get some of those along the way. There's three of the top 10 home run hitting teams in the country in this regional in Knoxville. Tennessee is number one at 141. Campbell is seventh in the nation in home runs hit, and Georgia Tech is eighth. And so, I mean, there's a lot of offense in this series. Now, by far, Tennessee is the best pitching. So I think some of it will depend on how sharp Tennessee is on the mound. But the thing is Tennessee seems to ultimately have answers. So maybe a starter isn't as sharp. Well, they'll just go to seven other guys that have an option to go to. And somebody is going to be on and really good because they almost all have. So that's really the separator. But sometimes it's an accumulation of a game before Tennessee cashes in on an opponent, whether it's a hot pitcher or whether, you know, Tennessee needs to make adjustments at the plate in terms of following the scout and not chasing pitches up in the zone, which some teams tend to be able, when Tennessee is maybe overly aggressive, they will get them to strike out with fastballs up in the zone. When they're disciplined, Tennessee will take walks like crazy. So sometimes it takes a few of those at-bats, but whether it's the depth of pitching, whether it's the adjustments they make offensively, and guys will go 0-for-3 and then come through with a clutch hit to break open a tie game, and then they explode to finish you off in the end. So that's where a tough game can be for part of a game, and then in the end Tennessee finds a way. They have in many games. So I expect Tennessee to win through this regional, but I also wouldn't be surprised, whether it's Georgia Tech or Campbell, to maybe for a period of time in either of their any of their games to give Tennessee a tussle, but maybe Tennessee's depth to win out, especially when you're looking at a Georgia Tech who has an ERA of almost 7 on the mound as a team.
I was astounded by that. But, you know, Vince, we saw Georgia Tech here last year in the Nashville Regional, and it was a similar profile. They could hit, but they just didn't have enough pitchers to really challenge them. One of the pitchers that's intriguing is Marquise Grissom Jr. He's the son of the longtime Braves center fielder, Indians player. Back then they were called the Indians, of course. Don't sing me on that. Back then they were still known as.
You're fine.
But he's probably their best starting pitcher, Vince, and his ERA is 5.40, as you've seen. But and he is talented. He has got a great arm. But he pitched in one of the games last year. But I'm a little surprised he hasn't made a big jump statistically from last year to this year. But it's just indicative of their entire staff.
Yeah, I think he was just a freshman last year, so he's a sophomore. So he still has time. And that was a really offensive league in the ACC. So that's where the numbers can be a little bit misleading at times, positively or negatively.
Yeah, and the park you play in goes to show you, too. That's part of it.
Right, in the park, and once you get out of league, right, because now it's pitchers you haven't seen before. SEC, the SEC Network did an SEC Inside special on the SEC tournament and kind of told the story, and they had some of the coaches mic'd up, including Jim Schlossnagel at Texas A&M, and they actually had really compelling audio of Schlossnagel talking to a couple of his hitters and talking to them and saying, you've never seen this guy before. Why are you swinging at the first pitch? You don't swing against left-handers really well. Take the first pitch. Why are you chasing that first pitch? I mean, it was just really cool insight on a coach talking to his player in reality, with just being real with them. And so sometimes it takes some time for guys to adjust, and sometimes the pitchers do have those advantages over the hitters when you haven't seen them, unless there's a big discrepancy on the talent like you'll see in the 1-4 matchup. So and we've also seen a number of times some of the guys that have done the best job against Tennessee this year, guys that didn't have a good record and had a terrible ERA. I mean, the kid at Tennessee Tech that was a wizard against the Vols and at Smoky Stadium, his ERA was really bad. So those kind of things can be misleading if a guy just finds his groove and is at his best and motivated and focused. A lot of kids are done with school, so then now maybe their minds are clear. So there's a lot of things that can come into play here, but yes, the ballpark is a part of that as well. By the way, Georgia Tech staff, this is not a good stat. Home runs allowed by their pitching staff, 296 in the nation, 84 home runs allowed, and if they face Tennessee, that's kind of not a good recipe.
Yeah, they've hit a lot and given up a lot. I mean, their park is a hitter's park. There's no question. But here's my last question for you, Vince, real quick. Do you think they're about to start? Is Georgia Tech starting their top pitchers, or are they going to play the game of, hey, we've got to save our best pitchers to play Tennessee in the second game, and we've got to figure out a way to beat Campbell without him?
I am not there yet, so I haven't seen the lineup, to be honest with you. I will check it out here
shortly. I'm curious about that. That's a dangerous game to play, because all of a sudden you find yourself in the loser's bracket, and then you're screwed. But I have seen the gamble being taken.
It's not just Georgia Tech. It's Campbell, because Campbell's starter is a possible first-round pick as well in Thomas Harrington. And his numbers are far better than anyone else. He's 11-2 with a 2.21 ERA, 16 walks, 109 strikeouts. I mean, those are Chase Dolander kind of numbers this year. So, and then there's a drop off after that. Although Cade Kuehler has an ERA at 3.62. So, but do they save Harrington for a potential game two against Tennessee?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Dolander versus Harrington, two future first round picks starting against each other. So that it just depends on how much faith you have in the first guy, and also how you set up your pitching prior to. Tennessee set it up with Tidwell, Dolander, and then a combination of Beam or Burns for a game three, potentially in a regional final. We'll see how those teams line it up, but it is very much a factor in what happens in that first game.
Vinny, appreciate it as always. Enjoy the weekend. should be a nice weekend for some baseball, and we'll recap on Monday.
Sounds good. You guys have a great weekend. Appreciate
you. You too. Vince Ferrara at Vince Sports on Twitter. Free and easy to do. WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville. And, of course, he'll be a part of the broadcast and on the call with John Wilkerson today. Tonight at 5 o'clock our time when Tennessee will take on Alabama State. Back to wrap up the first hour next. Back here on the DDC, John McClain in the on-deck circle. He'll join us to begin the second hour. Good conversation there with Vince Ferrara. I don't think it's going to be...
It's going to be a laser show. Yeah. Let's just be honest.
I don't think it's going to be a juicy regional.
Not as exciting.
It won't be. There's not going to be any dramatic finish.
Juice is an interesting word, but
yeah. Well, no, that's
the ball
that's,
will be flying.
I'm saying it's not going to be. I don't think it's going to be that interesting. I think they're going to run away with it. Now, the interesting one, because there's a lot of these SEC teams that are going to be on the road. And we're not talking about a regional here. Vanderbilt is, of course, going to be Corvallis in Oregon, and it's going to be Oregon State's regional. And they start today, I believe, first pitch is at 3 our time, or is it 2?
Yeah, it's the first game out there, out west. So it's a 3 o'clock start. And Vanderbilt is the 2 seed, so they are in the predicament that Campbell and Georgia Tech are in. You've got a really strong host that can really hit. So what do? Do you try to save your best pitcher for the second game and risk losing the first game? I've seen Vanderbilt play it both ways. Most of the time, and Tim Corbin will tell you, almost every time, he has gone with his ace in the first game. And that's what he's doing today. He's going to go with Carter Holton, who is by far their hottest pitcher, and I think, he is, at the end of the day, their best pitcher. He is just a true freshman right out of high school, but he is a talent. Remember I said before, right as the season was starting, there's a lot of comparisons to a left-handed Sonny Gray. You know that he's a little undersized, but he's a good athlete, and he's got all the stuff, and he's a great competitor. So they're going with him today against San Diego, who is a very good team out of the West Coast Conference. That's Gonzaga's conference, if you're familiar with the basketball. And that's a good baseball league, too. They've got more than one team in there. Gonzaga is in it. So it's a good league. It's not the SEC. But they're not going to take any chances. They want to win that first game. The question then would be, and you can't get ahead of yourself because you got to win that first game, but who would you have that could beat Oregon State at Oregon State? Most years, Vanderbilt's had plenty of starting depth where he wouldn't worry about it. Hey, Rocker goes game one, Leiter goes game two. I mean, that's no problem. Or
right.
Price goes game one, Miner goes game two, or Sonny Gray goes game one. And, you know, usually you have two or three guys you really like. This Vanderbilt team is not like that, especially towards the end of the season. I really thought, and this is what's happened most years, that by the end of the year, some talented guys figure it out and are pitching really well. That hasn't happened. They've lost 5 out of 6, and they've been pummeled in a lot of those games. LSU, it was a nightmare.
Yeah, it was bad.
And the SEC tournament wasn't much better except for the game that Holton pitched. So I can see Tim Corbin saying, look, we've got to get into that winner's bracket, because if you lose the first game, it's a long road back. And if you're lacking depth in pitching, you're just simply going to run out of arms. There's no way through it. So I think the better play is to do what they're doing today. But I've seen people gamble and save that second. You know, like Campbell is a great example, right? They know they don't have enough depth to go through the loser bracket, but their best chance of maybe winning it is to find a way to win today against Georgia Tech and then have the guy that is potentially a first-round pick pitch against the Vols. That's maybe your one shot. Then you hope that you can find a way to beat them one more time.
But why take that route? You remember Duke, the first game? They were right? That was game one.
But that was the super regional. That was the 2 out of 3.
True. Okay, you're right. That was the super regional. I'm trying to think. See, Austin Peay, did they throw their ace?
Oh, yeah.
At game one? That was a regional.
Joe Rexrode wrote an article about some past Vanderbilt won overall seeds. There's some great Vanderbilt teams that lost, and that was a classic. The first time they ever really got on the big radar was 07 with David Price.
That was an unbelievable
Pedro game. Alvarez, Ryan Flaherty. Those, yeah. That was the nucleus. Mike Minor was a freshman. So they were just getting the top recruits. They still were not as deep as they were, you know, in the years that came after that, but he was getting them on the map. They were the one overall seed. But Austin Peay took him to extra innings.
Who was that kid? That I mean, he pitched. He was lights out. He was so good. It was Sean.
Sean. He pitched in the major leagues for a long, long time.
He did. Kelly?
Sean Kelly.
Sean Kelly?
Pitched a great game. It was 1-1. It was 1-0 going into the ninth.
I was going to say, was it the final 2-1?
Yeah. It was 1-0 Vanderbilt going into the ninth, and a kid hit a home run off of Price to tie it up. And so Price went, I think, the full nine, and then – Casey Weathers, who was another high first-round pick that didn't pan out, had to pitch three innings in relief.
Yeah.
And so they won the game, but it sort of weakened the pitching staff. And Michigan won the second game. It forced Vanderbilt to go through the loser's bracket. They got all the way back to the final game, and then Price gave up the home run to the kid. The pinch hitter was hitting under 200. It was just a nightmare. But yep. it was the first foray into this regional strategy that we watch now. Since then, since 2005, they've been in it every year. So I've seen every pathway you can have. They've hosted, they've not hosted. But the question will be for this regional, do they have enough pitching to get through? Somebody's going to have to step up and pitch better than they have been of late.
John McClain will step up next and begin the second hour with us next.